The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Oh, we have a series, folks. What's going on, everybody? Welcome into First Take. Thank you for being with us live from NYC, South Street Seaport. Stephen A. Smith, Max Kellerman, I'm Molly Karam Rose. Jamal, the Joker, the Nuggets get their first win of the series. Now the Lakers up 2-1. Game four tomorrow. Stephen A., are you concerned about L.A.?
Not even a little bit. Not yet. It's 2-1. They got to win another game. If they lose game four and they're down 3-1, what are we going to be saying? It's over. Yeah. Are we not going to be saying that? So the bottom line is that tie the series 2-2, and then you'll have yourself a series. Up until that moment, there's nothing to be concerned about here. If none of us predicted that the Nuggets were going to get swept. We all know that Murray and Jokic are no joke, and Jeremy Grant showing up and dropping 26 points. Mad respect where it's due. I actually thought the Lakers would win this series in six games and route that, six, possibly seven, but I stuck with six. That means Denver's going to win two games, okay? This is one of them. So as far as I'm concerned, this ain't a series until it's tied. And it ain't tied yet. So, no, I'm not feeling
it. Why are you tempting the basketball gods like this? Why, of all teams, would you point to the Nuggets and say, series over?
Because I want to see this. Because I want to see it.
Well, there you go. You're going to bring the rain?
He's always got an agenda.
I mean, here's the problem with this Nuggets team. Lakers go up 3-1. Series is not over. I just watched this Denver team rise from the dead against the Jazz. That series is over, down 3-1. Donovan Mitchell doing a prime Dwayne Wade impersonation. It was unbelievable the way they came back in that series. And then gasped from that seven-game series. They play the Clippers. The Clippers take care of them game one, of course, like a schedule loss. And then the Clippers go up 3-1. This ain't the Jazz. These are the Clippers. I picked them. So many people picked them. The smart money was on the Clippers to go all the way this year. Down 3-1 to Kawhi and them. They came storming back. And by the way, when the Clippers were up 10 around the half in game seven, I thought, this game is over. The Nuggets got this. Mark Jackson joked on the broadcast, Denver's got them right where they want them. He wasn't kidding. That's the way it felt. As someone who wanted to see the Clippers advance. Now, I am a Lakers fan. I'm scared to death right now. The way the Lakers came back in that game, Stephen A., Rondo went into playoff Rondo mode on defense. I have rarely experienced something like that. A guy who, during the regular season, at best is an okay role player, in the playoffs turned into a dude who defensively wills his team back into the game. The way he was jumping into passing lanes, the kind of defense he was playing, that was unreal, and we all felt it. Oh, that's it. 3-0 Lakers. Did the Nuggets fold? The Nuggets didn't fold. The Nuggets started shooting daggers, especially that Murray three. Stephen A., you cannot breathe life into this Denver team. That's what happened yesterday.
I really don't feel like being the bad guy. I mean, actually, I'm in a very, very good mood. I mean, as much as I'm happy to be here, a part of me kind of wishes I was in the bubble, you know, just to be up there up close, you know, feel a part of the NBA action. You know, but I made a mistake, Max. You're absolutely right. I picked the Denver Nuggets to lose this series in six games. I'm now picking them to lose in five. I'm changing it to five games.
Say hello to the bad guys.
Here's the reason why. First of all, Murray is a star. Yeah. Jokic is obviously a star. I understand what Max is saying about don't wake up anybody. And Jeremy Grant showed up, dropped 26 points. I mean, special night, no question about it, but still an aberration. Rondo, playoff Rondo, we know who he is. We know who LeBron is with his triple-double last night. We know who Anthony Davis is. I predicted the Lakers are going to win and go up 3-1. Once they're up 3-1, everybody's hearing the chatter what Max is talking about. Don't mess with them. Don't let sleeping dogs lie, blah, blah, blah. Well, you came back 3-1 against Utah. You came back 3-1 against the Clippers. So guess who's not going to be asleep if the Lakers go up 3-1? It won't be LeBron and AD because they saw what happened to the Clippers and the Utah Jazz. And as a result, letting the Denver Nuggets come to, you know, be 3-1, be down 3-1, and then win a game five and pull within 3-2 and threatening and reminding the basketball world of what they did the two previous series, the Lakers ain't going to have that. If you are the Denver Nuggets, what happened when the Lakers went on their 19-2 run last night? You know what happened? The Lakers switched to a zone defense and forced turnovers. For some reason, these professional basketball players forgot how to play against the zone. I don't have any explanation for it. I don't have it because you're
true.
I mean, high school and college, you're going against the zone, but somehow, some way, in the pros, I guess because you're playing against man defenses all regular season long, that you forgot how to go to perform against the zone.
Bothered the Celtics, but that's what they bothered did. Everybody.
Remember, game two, Lakers committed 24 turnovers.
Yeah.
Remember that. They got sloppy. They were sloppy the first three quarters last night, and then they came alive. They came alive because they forced defense. They came alive because they went to a zone. All I'm trying to say is this. If the Lakers go up 3-1, they ain't going to slip. I think they're going to win game four. And then obviously being up 3-1, I don't
Here's
believe
the problem.
They're going to let the Jazz and the Clippers, they're going to emulate that kind
Here's
of history.
Here's the problem. The way I phrased it, you're piggybacking that. Don't let them. It reminds me of the fight game sometimes. Don't let him get on the inside. Well, he's working his way on the inside. What do you mean don't let him? The other dude's in there too. He got a plan too. The Lakers didn't let the Nuggets do anything. The Nuggets took that, and a lesser mentally strong team, mm-hmm. a lesser emotionally strong team would have collapsed with that Lakers onslaught. Mm-hmm. The Lakers clamped on the, as I said, Rondo in particular, but LeBron too. Stephen A., the Nuggets came right back and went on a 10-1 run. Toward the end of that game.
Well, I mean, Murray hit two threes, and he found Millsap under the basket. That's Murray being Murray, no question. He deserves credit for it.
But that's the thing. What I say about Jamal Murray, when this dude gets hot, there's no stuff. It's not like, it turns out that he's hot because it's over. This dude doesn't miss, and Jokic is a load to begin with.
Let me tell you.
Go ahead. You got Porter, who's ascending. If Porter has a good game, let alone a dude like Grant, who he and Plumlee messed up whatever that was, that defensive assignment in game two. The Nuggets should be
up. That
was
all Plumlee.
The Nuggets should be up 2-1 right now. The Lakers are lucky to be up 2-1.
You say that a lot of times, and I often remind you that guess what? It happened for a reason. If they didn't win that way, they would have won some other way. That's the way I view it personally. That's number one. Number two, and more importantly, let me tell you something, man. When you look at these Lakers, here's what you got to marvel at. You got to step back and pay homage to Frank Vogel and that coaching staff. You watch how they transition on defense? I mean, just switch it up. I mean, my Lord, it's like an amoeba. They're just coming at you from all angles. You don't know which way they're going to hit you. They're trapping 1 minute. They're laying in a 2-3 zone the next. Yeah, 2-1-2, they're coming at you. You're just looking at them, the way they switch bodies, always contesting shots. And what it demands is that you're patient and that you pass the ball fluently. And
Murray did.
What I'm saying to you, it took Murray to close and do what he did. But prior
They have Murray.
When the Lakers went on a 19-2 run, again, it's because other dudes couldn't step up. So if you're the Lakers and you're an elite defensive team, which they are this year, it is entirely plausible that you adopt the mentality, somebody else is going to have to pull this off. We ain't letting you beat us. We're going to make Jeremy Grant be a better passer. We're going to make Michael Porter, who you know I love. We're going to make Michael Porter be a better passer. The Joker, ain't no question of his passing ability. But again,
there are too many dudes. Jokic and Murray are both like MVP-caliber players.
But it's not too many dudes.
Porter's ascended. Grant showed you could do it. Millsap's a vet. They got dudes.
You're talking about their talent. I'm talking about the usage of their talent.
You brought up the Lakers' defense.
There's too many people that they don't use enough.
You brought up the Lakers until they need to. You brought up, because Millsap had a big game, you brought up the Lakers' defense. It is true. When you look at the dudes who in big moments can play mm-hmm. defense like they mean it,
right.
Rondo, LeBron, AD, Dwight Howard, Danny Green, they can throw a lot of guys at you who know how to play defense. But the Nuggets can throw a lot of guys at you who know how to play offense and can shoot. And the Lakers, that was an especially bad shooting night, but that was always the question with them this year.
Yeah.
Did they have enough shooting? We don't know that they do to beat the Nuggets.
Well, they need to hit some threes. 6 of 26 from three last night.
True.
We will leave it there. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. We got a series in the East as well. The Heat winning the first two. Gordon Hayward came back and Boston won the last one. Look who's here. Former Celtic Kendrick Perkins. Always good to see you, sir. Always bringing the heat. Max, I'll start with you, though. Who wins game four? Is it the Celtics or the Heat?
I think it's the Celtics for a couple reasons. Number one, they're more desperate because they're the ones in the hole. Number two, And maybe this is really the lead. They have Gordon Hayward back. And the reason I thought the Celtics would win this a very tough series in seven games that could have gone either way, and since Miami jumped out 2-0, I'm like, maybe Miami wins it, because I thought they would have Gordon Hayward. And when you look at this Celtics team, they have four basically all-star players in their starting lineup, and Tice, who's an above-average player at center, right? That's Gordon Hayward, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, who's an emerging superstar. I was saying last year, he can pretty soon be the best offensive player on a championship team. Maybe that's this year. And Kemba Walker, right? And that's really tough. When there's no one player, apologies to Tatum, heading into this playoff series, that you're like, oh my God, that's like LeBron or someone like that, right? That's AD. It really matters your big four. Each one, each piece becomes more important if there's no one MVP caliber player there. Stephen A. and I would argue about the effect that Kyrie Irving had on the Celtics. And Stephen A., you would point to coach playing Gordon Hayward too much, who just come off an injury and all that. But in fact, when you talk to people around the Celtics, Brad Stevens felt he needed Gordon Hayward's passing in the starting lineup. But what else? You know what else you can use from Gordon Hayward? His defense. You know what else? His shooting, his playmaking ability, his transition game, the fact that you don't need to run plays for him to get his points. And when you add those four, and now in the playoffs, go to your best five-man lineup, right? So no Tice, as good as he is, but Marcus Smart, who, like, you know, we talk about playoff Rondo. We're going to be talking about playoff Smart when he's an older player, right? Because this dude is something else in the playoffs. When you go to those five, that is a tough, tough lineup to beat. Given the fact that they are more desperate, I like the Celtics in game four.
Well, listen, so do I. I like them in game four, but that's why we picked this series to go seven games, because we understand how tight-knit it is. And the reality of the situation is that if Miami's going to win this series, Jimmy Butler has to step up. He hasn't been aggressive offensively. He's got 2014 and 17 points in the first three games of this series. I'm sorry, Jimmy Butler, we need more. It's just that simple. If the Miami Heat are going to the NBA Finals, you need more from Jimmy Butler. Now, obviously, he's ceded some of the offensive responsibility to Bam Adebayo, who's averaging 22, Goran Dragic, who's averaging about 21. And Bam Adebayo's got something to say because they got outscored 60-36 in the paint in game three. That was problematic. Boston came out. They were clearly aggressive. They were going after it. And he has to make his presence felt. We love Bam Adebayo. We love his youth. We love his athleticism. We love his motor. But he's going to have to play bigger. You're going to have to get some assistance. Obviously, he can't do it by himself. But you need to keep Boston from controlling the paint area. Outside of that, it's Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler showed us against Milwaukee he is a star in this league. Not that we didn't know it, because we know that he's a rough rider and what he's capable of doing on both ends of the floor. But in the end, you can't. When you talk about going to the finals, it can't be 2014 and 17. You can have a game like LeBron had in game two and then come back and drop a triple-double with 30 points in game three. You can do that, but what you can't do is have 2014 and 17. That's just moderate offensive production from your star. That's great numbers from secondary and third options and things of that nature. But when you are the star and a championship appearance is on the line, 20, 14, and 17 points, Jimmy Butler, is unacceptable. We need more. It's just that simple. And he's got to do it. We know he can do it. But he's got to get more assertive offensively because unlike the other dudes, when Goran Dragic scores, he scores. When Bam Adebayo scores, he scores. Okay? But when Jimmy Butler scores, it seems to galvanize everybody on Miami squad around it. It's his team. And you know how much I love Tyler Hero and Duncan Robinson. Mm-hmm. Duncan Robinson is a specialist. And Tyler Hero, I mean, this brother is something special. I think he might end up being the MVP of tonight's game if they win. But you'd still, everything still starts with Jimmy Butler. He's got to step up. Being good is not good enough. You got to be a star, especially when you're going against Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. That's what Jimmy Butler needs to do.
Kirk, where are you?
I'm taking the Heat tonight, and Stephen, I agree. Jimmy does have to step it up. I think he waits around too long and waits towards the fourth quarter to get aggressive. Well, he got to come out from the jump being Jimmy Butler and being aggressive and actually shooting the ball. He looked passive-aggressive and looks like he's not trying to score. But here it is. The Miami Heat could play bad and beat the Celtics. The Celtics cannot play bad and beat the Miami Heat. And if you look back at game three, the Celtics almost had to play perfect. Max, you talk about their big four, but look at it. Jason Tatum almost hit a triple-double, almost had a triple-double. Jaylen Brown was 11 for 18 from the field. Kemba Walker was 8 for 16. Marcus Smart was 5 for 10 with 20 points. And the Heat still had a chance to win the game. And Goran Dragic was 2 for 10. Jay Crowder was 2 for 10. They really didn't get nothing from the bench except for Tyler Hero, who's, by the way, is a stud. Like Stephen A. Smith said, is a stud. People talk about how great of a scorer he is and how well he can shoot the ball, but he brings so much other things to the table. You talking about a guard that's underrated as a rebounder. You talking about Tyler Hero, a guy that's an underrated playmaker. But the common denominator that's going to be in this series is going to be Bam. I believe Bam is a top three big in this league, right behind Jokic and Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis and Jokic, and then it's Bam, right? So when you look at Bam, he could dominate the paint like he did last game. Dominate, when I mean on the offensive end, notching in 25 points and 16 rebounds, but he has to protect the paint. And let's not look, Eric Spoelstra had more than enough time to game plan. And you better be sure that he's going to come out with a master game plan in this game four that's going to have the Celtics thinking. Right? Adding Gordon Haywood back, they went small. Grant Williams came in off the bench and hit two crucial threes when they needed them. So the Celtics have to play almost perfect to beat the Heat. And the Heat really don't have to play that perfect to beat the Celtics.
I like the Bam point because maybe that forces them away a little bit from their very best lineup. If, in fact, that's smart in for Tice because they give up some size there. But really, when you look at this series, and I switched from Celtics in seven to Heat in seven because I didn't know the Celtics wouldn't have Hayward for the first two games, and that's why I believe they fell down in an 0-2 hole. In a very tight series, I think that'll probably make the difference. But when you're talking about just the matchups, like, for instance, a game four matchup, who's going to be the best player on the floor between two pretty evenly matched teams? You're right about Hero. Duncan Robinson is a different kind of shooter. He's like a special, special shooter. Dragic and Butler, and they got a lot of good players just like the Celtics, right? If you said they're big four, big five, they're all either all-star or trending in that direction too. Who's going to be the best player? Like if it was 2 years from now, I'd say Jason Tatum's going to be the best player in this series. But it's not 2 years from now. It's right now. Can Jimmy Butler be the best player in this series? If he can, I think the Heat will win. If Jason Tatum can, I think the Celtics will win.
Well, listen, bottom line, you got to pick a team, and we're picking the Celtics tonight. You did, I did. Hold on, KP. I will tell you this. The Celtics led from start to finish. I'm not going to ignore the contribution that Gordon Haywood made. They obviously were playing desperate. Their backs were against the wall. Miami lost only its second game of the postseason. This is a different kind of series. I think the teams are relatively evenly matched. We can't ignore that. We can't ignore guys like Wanamaker and others coming off the bench for Boston, just like you have, whether it's an Olynyk, it's the Heroes of the World and others coming off the bench for Miami. They're relatively evenly matched. So it comes down to, are the stars going to show up? When I looked at Tyler Hero, for example, I saw not only a guy making perimeter shots, I saw aggression.
He's a player.
And that level of aggression is what we should be getting from Jimmy Butler. Period. Jimmy Butler, Tyler Hero, somebody. Right. Now, Tyler Hero's different because unlike the rest of the team, like Goran Dragic and others, when they score, they just score. Tyler Hero scores, it seems to give a team a spark because obviously he's pulling up in people's face. He's pulling up long range and stuff like that. But nobody galvanizes the Miami Heat.
So Tatum is going like this. Is Butler still better than Tatum today?
I'm not going to say he's better than Tatum. I mean, he's good. He's pretty damn good. We know it. But Tatum is a rising star in this league. And Butler's special too.
Kirk, I want to give you the last word. Then I want to get to something else. So finish us up here.
But Max, I hear you keep talking about what star is going to step up. And this is the way that I look at this Miami Heat team. Really, the way that they play, the system that Eric Spoelstra have them in, it could be anybody night. Sometimes you see Jay Crowder hit the big shot. The way that they run their offense and the way that the Miami Heat plays reminds me of that 2004 Detroit Piston team, where it's not really one superstar, but they have a collective group that can actually get the job done. So the system that Miami Heat has is why I picked them to win this series along with Eric Spoelstra. So, you know, I got
how's that
Miami
different
Heat
than the Celtics
tonight.
I agree with you about that, but how's that different than the Celtics?
Because Max, you got to watch the style of play. The Heat is doing more cutting. The Heat is running more offense. Where the Celtics offense is more, here JT, go make a special play. Here Kemba Walker on the ISO. Where they have to, they do more isolation sets and depend on their stars to make incredible shots. Where the Miami Heat just do ball movement and player movement. That's the difference, Max.
Fair point.
Big Perk, let me get in here because I was looking at one of your tweets and I want to share it with the guys because it was kind of on my mind when you were doing the Stephen A's list yesterday. Hey, Stephen A, I need for you and Max to put some respect on the Cardinals. Max, is Perk right about the Cards? We didn't bring them up in the Stephen A's list 2-0.
Don't look at me. I mean, I said I don't think they're a top five team yet, but I said before the season I think they're competitive for a playoff spot. I thought Kyler Murray was going to have a big year, especially once he got DeAndre Hopkins. Oh, look at me, Perk.
Well, first of all, let me say I got a few things to say to Perk. And put Perk up on that split screen so I can look at him when I'm speaking to him right now. First of all, Perk, number one, you can't look like a pastor and then use that language in a tweet. Can't do it. You gotta have a different look.
You can't look like the chain.
Even with the chain, yeah, there are some pastors that be rocking those chains. Yes, they do. You can't look
what
like a pastor. And
there?
Then we'll use that kind of language in a tweet. Number one, number two, Max is absolutely right. We give nothing but love to Kyler Murray. Cliff Kingsbury is who I question because obviously I never felt like he deserved a job, but that doesn't take away from the fact that he's doing a good job thus far this season. He just didn't have the resume that warranted him getting the job. And number three, I'm not really concerned about your feelings about the Arizona Cardinals. Is it true what I hear, KP, that you were actually trying to give the Dallas Cowboys props, that you got love for the Dallas Cowboys? Are you one of those? Are you one of those? Is that true, Kurt?
No, Stephen A., first of all, before the season started, I ended my 20-year relationship with the Dallas Cowboys, and I moved on to the Arizona
Cardinals. It's a divorce.
That's why.
So you divorced them.
Because of Kyler Murray and D. Hopkins, I didn't want to be one of those guys that hopped on the bandwagon and say, oh, I'm going to go with Baltimore. I'm going to go with Kansas City. No, I'm going to go with a team that no one is really talking about, a team that's on the rise like the Arizona
Cardinals. Hold on, this is very important.
2-0, hold on.
This is very important.
May I
ask why you divorced the Dallas Cowboys? I need to know this. This is very important. Why did you divorce the Dallas Cowboys?
Abuse, obviously.
Not because and it has nothing to do with Dak Prescott, the players, or nothing. I divorced The Dallas Cowboys, because of the reason you've been on TV for the last three months calling out Jerry Jones to speak on issues, so I decided to take my talents elsewhere.
That's fair.
That's why.
It's very legit.
Got it. Because I thought it was he just likes the shiny new thing, you know.
No, I get it.
See what happened there.
Oh, I thought he just had enough of all the futility of being a Cowboys fan, but he has a legitimate reason.
There's a myriad of reasons. And we're going to talk Kyler a little more later in the show.
Yeah. Miley and Max, I feel sorry for y'all. Miley and Max, I feel sorry for y'all right now deal with the New York Giants, but that's another story.
I feel sorry for me,
too. Yeah, I got nothing to say. I just appreciate
it. What are you going
to
do? Right. It's my life.
They
I'll take
it. They have the nerve to stink in a city that takes so much in taxes, too.
All right. By the way, game four tonight on ESPN, a Stephen A. Sports Center to get you set. NBA countdown before that, so check it out. Perk, we'll talk to you later. Thank you. Always a good time.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
Surprisingly, but true and factual enough, if I do what I'm supposed to do, as I'm expecting to, that will not even be a topic of discussion here moving forward. You're talking to a person who, you know, money at this particular point in my career is not important. And let's be honest, I've made money, but for everything that I play this game for, I haven't received yet. And that's why I'm playing. So it's not about money. It's about respect.
I find those comments really interesting, Stephen A. Obviously, Cam, a former MVP, now playing for peanuts on a one-year deal. He did make $123 million in his career. But are you buying that, playing for respect, not the money?
I am buying it. You know, I have this old saying, Max Kellerman, I never really, really think about my money. Do you know why I don't think about my money? Because once I sign my name on the dotted line and I have direct deposit, what's there to think about? I know the only time I think about it is on payday when I click my account to make sure that my money's there. That's it. I pay no attention to it otherwise than that because you know it's coming. This is what your situation is. And that's a big, big deal. That's number one. Number two, and more importantly, here's why I believe Cam, because it was the disrespect that was shown to him by the Carolina Panthers. The lateness with which they let him go. The fact that the market was dried up because most teams had already moved forward and had established what their situation was. And number three, and more importantly, everybody was talking about him as if they didn't recall he was a former league MVP that led the Carolina Panthers to a Super Bowl. I also think that when you look at it from that perspective, the fact that you were talking about his skill set, you weren't just talking about his injuries. People like myself was talking about his accuracy throwing a football because with the exception of 1 year with North Turner when he completed 67.9% of his passes, he had not completed better than 60% of his passes, in his career. He could completed like 60% like two on two occasions. Outside of that, it was below 60%. So he's listening to people talk to him. He's looking at a new era of quarterbacks, the Deshaun Watson, the Patrick Mahomes of the world. Obviously, Russell Wilson's been there, there a while. And he's like, wait a minute, as Roy Jones would say, y'all must have forgot. Mm-hmm. Forgot who the hell I am? I mean, I can ball. It's one thing if we sit up there and we're saying you're old because you're Tom Brady, you're 43 years of age, you don't have it anymore. This dude's 31 years of age. He had a foot injury, and people were talking about him like he was straight garbage. And I think that when it gets to that point, and it's coupled by the fact that Carolina did what they did in letting him go. And remember, they had a team poll. This is a team-driven poll. The best players in franchise history, Max. And he wasn't even one of the guys selected as a multiple choice. It's so, when you see those kind of things that transpire, you're not thinking about the money because you're confident the money will come. It's, you're thinking about that. That's on your mind. And that's why I believe him.
Number one, Cam sounds like a patriot to me. He sounds like a patriot who's going to be there for a while. That's what Tom Brady did. Yeah, you restructured the deal and paid, And I believe him because he's made a ton of money. And he's going to get a lot more. It's what like what Damian Lillard said. Don't believe that time is money, money is time. You stay focused, you look up, and your money is fine. You know, as he does his thing, it's kind of like if he does his thing, his money's going to be fine. And he knows that. He's got the money. What he needs is the respect of his legacy. This dude was a league MVP, voted by his peers the best player in football in the middle of Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers and Drew Brees' prime. That dude was the best player. I remember on Sports Nation one day, going back, I don't know, 5 years or something like that, before he won the MVP, I guess, we were doing best young quarterbacks in the game. And it was, as I recall, it was like Andrew Luck, Russell Wilson, Colin Kaepernick, or RG3. And we were in the meeting, and I'm like, oh, have we forgot about Cam? We forgot about Cam freaking Newton? People just like to forget about this dude. I totally agree with that. Let me say this, finally. Not only do I believe what Cam is saying, I think Cleveland should think very carefully about trading Odell to the Patriots now instead of later, and I'll tell you why. Odell Beckham has no connection with a Baker Mayfield. You can see that.
None.
This dude wants to be, obviously, in a place with a coach and a quarterback where he could also get to the next level. This dude also has his money, also has a reputation. Oh, Odell's a malcontent and all that stuff. We know Belichick loves him, right? Like, Belichick was after him at a certain point. If Cam had a receiver like that on that team, if Belichick could put a receiver like that with Cam Newton, there's the next Patriots dynasty.
Well, that's one side to look at it. The other side is taking back or piggybacking off of what you said about Belichick on numerous occasions for years. Do you really want to make a deal with Belichick? It usually works for him, but doesn't work for you.
I agree.
So I would tell you,
normally I would agree.
Cleveland, like, I would tell you that with Cleveland, that might not work because you're dealing with Belichick and what you're going to get in return.
But normally,
that is a question mark.
Normally, I agree, but here's what I'm saying. Odell's value is going to go down throughout the season. He's going to be a malcontent eventually on that team because Baker's not looking for him. And as when he becomes a distressed asset, Belichick's going to give you less. Right now, you might be able to strike the best deal. Cam needs a number one outside threat receiver.
Where I disagree with you is I don't think that that Odell Beckham Jr.'s stock is going to plummet. I think anybody who knows football knows that the issue is Baker Mayfield. It's not Odell Beckham Jr. He's open. You can't get him the ball.
I don't mean because they think Odell's no good. I mean because they know, the Browns are going to have to trade him.
Listen,
do it now. Get out ahead of this.
I'll leave you with this. Drew Locke is making 8 times more than Cam Newton for perspective, but I'm sure a payday will come if he keeps up this type of play. Guys, this is a tough transition, and I bring you this news with heavy hearts. Chicago Bears Hall of Fame running back Gale Sayers has passed away at the age of 77. He was battling dementia, Stephen A. Terrible news for the football community.
Well, my heart goes out to his family, his loved ones. Let's put this all in perspective. Gale Sayers, the last time we saw him play football was 1971. A couple of years before that, he was playing under the elite level. Back in those days, you're playing 14 games, you rush for 1,000 yards, it means something. 1,000 yards meant a hell of a lot more back then than it does now. Gale Sayers was electrifying. He preceded Sweetness, Walter Payton. He preceded Barry Sanders. Obviously, he was playing around the same era as Jim Brown, and you have people that have talked about Gale Sayers as arguably the greatest running back we've ever witnessed. And nearly 50 years later, we sit here and we have to take a moment to pay homage to him. That is a testament to the level of greatness that he exhibited in the city of Chicago, no less. He was a treasure in football circles. Anybody who talked about him revered and talked about him in very glowing fashion. And all you need to do is see the highlights to know why. We respect him, we miss him, and we wish nothing but
the best. And off the field as well.
And off the field, yeah. Obviously.
There are four running backs who had contemporary. It's not about, like, just when you look at the film, and you'll see the video of Gale Sayers all day today on social media, and like, wow. Because nowadays, the athletes get better and better. It's not just about that. It's not just about the numbers. It's about the impression you make on your contemporaries, your contemporary audience. What did they come away feeling when they watched you? There are four running backs, as many great running backs as there have been, so many great running backs. When you're watching them, it's hard to believe anyone was ever better. But there are four that stand out, even among them. First, there was Jim Brown, then Gale Sayers, then Walter Payton, then Barry Sanders. People in those eras swear, that dude's the best I've ever seen. Growing up, my father swore up and down, Gale Sayers was the best running back he'd ever seen. We'll tell you that to this day.
Yeah.
Gale Sayers, the best he's ever seen. Very few athletes in any sport make that kind of impact on their contemporaries.
No question. And as Stephen A. said earlier, our heart goes out to his loved ones. Gail Sayers passed away at the age of 77. Rest in peace. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Our next guest is a best-selling author of over 20 years. His latest book chronicles arguably the greatest dynasty in sports. That would be the New England Patriots. Fittingly, it's called Dynasty, and it's the deep inside story from one of the most tight-lipped organizations in sports. It is available now, so go out and get it. Joining us now, Jeff Benedict. Jeff, so great to have you with us this morning, and really interested to talk to you. I told you this off-air. I grew up in Connecticut, not a Patriots fan, but obviously paid very close attention to them and their greatness. And I find the relationship so interesting. What can you tell us about that dynamic between a Robert Kraft, Bill Belichick, and Tom Brady?
Well, I think over the years, the debate about who is most responsible for the dynasty has revolved around Brady and Belichick. And I think what's been missing in the conversation is the role of the owner, and particularly the relationships that he maintained with Brady and Belichick, because they're very different. His relationship with Tom has always been familial, like father-son, in a really genuine way. And that was really instrumental in keeping Tom in Foxborough for an unprecedented 20 years. Kraft's relationship with Belichick is very different, but no less important. It's probably the most efficient professional relationship between an owner and a coach, perhaps in all of sports over the last two decades. And I think the latitude and discretion that he's given Belichick is very different than what he gave Parcells or Carroll. And that's had a lot to do with the success of the Patriots over the last 20 years.
Jeff, thank you for being on the show, sir. Let me ask you this question. When we think about how Jimmy Garoppolo was once there and he was shipped off because obviously Tom Brady still wanted to be there, and Mr. Kraft obviously wanted Tom Brady to stay there for as long as he possibly could get away with doing so, how much of an effect did that have on Belichick's relationship with Mr. Kraft, based off of the fact that obviously Kraft was making the decision that Belichick didn't want him to make?
Well, I think, Steve, that's a great question. And I think that over the years, if you look at the length of the Belichick-Kraft relationship, one of the things that Belichick said to me, actually wrote this in an email to me, is he talked about how he and Kraft usually agree on everything. They don't always agree, though, on everything. And when they do, there's an understanding at the end of the day of whose team this is. I think in the situation with Garoppolo, he was obviously a great choice to be a successor to Brady. I think that's why he was drafted. That's why he was brought there. That's also why they hung on to him for as long as they did, including that last year. If Belichick had traded him earlier, he probably could have got more for him, but he held on to him as an insurance policy. And in the end, Brady ended up having two of the best years of his career while Garoppolo was basically nipping at his heels. I think in the end, the decision to trade him, it was Belichick's decision. It wasn't as if Kraft told him what to do. The fact is, they knew what they had to do, and it was a joint decision, and Belichick executed it.
So I'm interested in, you know, when anyone's had as much success as Belichick has had as a coach with the Patriots, even without Brady, he's won more than twice as much as he's lost. This year so far, they look like the same old Patriots to me. It's like almost like Shakespeare. It can't just be one guy. There are actually, Shakespeare is 15 people, right? So I hear a lot about Ernie Adams, and I don't even know how to pronounce his first name, Burge Najarian, right? The kind of shadow advisors, the chief of staffs, this is Belichick's secret weapon. What can you tell me about those two in particular, but also the support around Belichick, who seem to get credit from those in the know?
Well, Ernie Adams and Burge Najarian have been with Belichick forever. He brought them to New England. They understand him. They're on the same wavelength. There's actually a great scene in the book, in the Dynasty, back in the snowball game with the Raiders, when Brady apparently had fumbled and the referees were reviewing that play. Up in the box, Ernie Adams, he's also seeing the review, and he's got the rule book memorized. His brain is like a computer chip. And he's talking on the headset to Charlie Weiss on the sideline and basically telling Charlie, I think the play is going to get, the call is going to get overturned because here's the rule. And Brady's standing there saying to Weiss, what's Ernie saying? And Charlie's telling him, I think we got a shot. Ernie's always been there. He is the guy in Belichick's ear, and I think his role has always been sort of understated but very significant.
Based off of what you're seeing from Cam Newton at this particular moment in time and knowing Belichick and Kraft the way that you do, specifically considering the level of affection that Kraft has for Brady, how much staying power do you see somebody like Cam having in New England based off of what you know about Belichick and Kraft and what they like for their franchise?
Well, there's a history, right, that there's now a track record to look at for this team or this franchise that stretches 20 years. It's about performance. It's about doing your job. It's about showing up. And I think, look, Cam's off to a fantastic start. There are very few players that were capable of coming into this situation where the greatest quarterback perhaps ever leaves. Those are huge shoes to fill. And Newton has stepped in and done a great job in the short term. And I think if he continues to play the way he's been playing, it's going to be great. They're all about winning. They're all about what you do on the field. And I think that Newton has shown that he's a leader and that he can step into Belichick's system, and he's been excelling at it. So, I mean, that bodes well for the Patriots and for him.
Yeah. To sustain greatness for that deal of time, it's fascinating. Jeff Benedict, thank you so much for being with us. Yeah. Everyone, pick up the Dynasty, available now. Jeff, take care.